appreciate that. So yes, hi, I'm Joel De La Garza. I'm the Chief Security Officer for Box. I am responsible for not only the protection of our customers' information, but also our physical security, our data center security, the security of the code that we write. So it's a pretty comprehensive set of responsibilities that we support from a Box perspective. And so we're in, you know, a pretty good number of the Fortune 500. We have a very large distributed enterprise base. Typically, our focus is on customers that really have a preference for high security products and features and a really high security operations. I will try to limit the gratuitous marketing to as little as possible and focus on sort of how we run security at Box. I think that, and this is obviously a little bit of our gratuitous marketing, and I won't get into it too much other than to say, we are a really interesting company in that we're going through a very similar transformation that all of you are. We, you know, have a data center, several data centers that we manage. I think we're up to 4 data centers now. They are traditional bare metal data centers. We write our own version of Linux. We run our own operating systems. We're focusing on containerization, doing all these really cool things in a very traditional IT sort of perimeter-based defense model. We also have a workforce that's fully cloud-enabled. So we don't have a corporate data center. We don't run our own email servers. We've basically offloaded that to SaaS providers. And so from a security perspective, we're living in this really strange world where we're drawn between kind of that perimeter-based, compliance-focused protection of an environment and this cloud-enabled world that's sort of really driving the way that everything is moving now. And so I usually like to start with a joke. Generally, I was starting with jokes about politics, but that's kind of on me now. So I was going to put up basically the joke for us is if I brought out our cloud security strategy from 2 years ago, everyone would laugh, right? Because we were thinking of cloud security initially as being a way of how do we airlift all this stuff that we do in our data centers to Amazon or to Google or to Azure. And it turns out that as you start to move into a cloud-enabled world, the things that break and the risks that you're facing are actually radically different than they have been. Right, so you're executing content in facilities that you don't have control over. You're working in a public multi-tenant environment where someone else has administrator privileges to those devices. The concept of a perimeter is gone, right? Because you're running your loads and executing your processes in an environment where a bank could be executing processes or a criminal syndicate could be executing processes, right? So it's a very strange world that you have to adjust to. And so for us, we really had to leave the legacy security model behind. And that was an expensive lesson. We made a couple of mistakes. I was going to put them up here, but then I thought I should probably not write them down. I will say that it's really important to understand that not all cloud providers are created equal. So there are a difference in capabilities between them. And although their marketing material may say that there is parity, especially when it comes to infrastructure cloud providers, it's really important that you understand and audit and really get to the bottom of the controls that they're providing. So we were doing an evaluation. We are one of Amazon's 10 largest customers. We're a pretty massive consumer of AWS. We were looking at moving to another cloud provider, obviously to diversify our supply chain, but also to reduce expenses. And so as we were evaluating these cloud providers, we made some assumptions about how we had configured this new cloud provider that were based on the way we had configured Amazon. Unbeknownst to us, this cloud provider actually gives you a publicly addressable IP address. It gives you an interface that's out there on the internet. There are no ACLs on that interface, and by the way, there's nowhere to figure out how to configure or turn that off. So we had exposed an interface, an unprotected interface, to the internet. It was sitting out there, and obviously people were banging away at it for a couple of hours. So it's really important to understand what that control looks like and how those controls break out between your cloud providers, and to really dive into the technical capabilities of them. And so in order to really help us get to some understanding of how we want to protect our environment and how we want to run our business, we've developed this thing we call the Dao of Zero. It's based on Lao Tzu's Dao De Jing. Earlier you heard the gentleman talking about zero trust. This is kind of a bit broader concept, taking several different disciplinary practices at a high level and finding a way to use this to drive not only the way that we operate our environment, but the way that we build our tools, the way that we build our product, and then the way that we go to marketing from a messaging perspective. And so we start first and foremost with that concept of zero trust. This is the idea that you have to eliminate implicit trust relationships. So I've been doing this now for about 20 years. I started initially focusing on doing red team type activities, intrusions, those sorts of things. Moved over to the blue side and doing incident response. The way that attackers work is that they look to leverage implicit trust in your relationship, in your environment. So they want to get a hold of your user's credentials, they want to get a hold of your user's devices, and then they want to pivot from that device to other things in your environment and escalate their privileges along the way, eventually giving them the ability to exfiltrate data or act on whatever their intents have to be. And so it's really important that you start to think about things like implicit trust and removing it from your environment, right? Remember the old days, the concept of a corporate network? It had a hard outer perimeter, and inside it was really soft and squishy, and once you got into that corporate network, you know, your file shares were open and you could download whatever content you wanted, right? That's the model that the attackers thrive on, and that's the thing you really have to target. You also have to make sure that policy follows content. And what that means is that it's not enough to just protect your information when it's sitting in a storage location, and whether that be cloud or on-premises. You actually have to make sure that the policies you have around protecting that data follow that data through its entire life cycle, right? When it's being displayed or rendered or used on an endpoint, when it's in transit in between different locations, you have to make sure that there is a control parity across that entire ecosystem. And the next thing you want to do is push your controls to the endpoints, right? For the last 15 years, we've really focused as an industry on buying network of devices, buying intrusion detection systems, buying really intelligent firewalls. In reality, your devices now are mobile. They're going everywhere. They're visiting China. They're visiting Russia. People are trying to get access to them, and they have to be protected regardless of where they are. And so you really have to make sure that those suite of controls and security preventative measures are deployed to those endpoints. So all that's great from an infrastructure protection perspective and a trust model perspective. The next thing you have to focus on is this concept of zero knowledge. And for us, zero knowledge is an almost religious belief that our customer's data belongs to our customer. And so we've been really focused on building solutions that prevent us from having access to any data that our customers have. And so we've really wanted to focus on operational controls and then also on encryption. So for the last 3 years, we've really been investing pretty heavily in developing new encryption technologies, giving our customers the ability to manage their own encryption keys, and making sure that, you know, from an insider threat perspective, that our customers are not only protected from hackers or intruders out on the internet, but they're also protected from us as their service provider. And so this is a really important component. So as most of you know, or at least those of you that work in the security business, the more encryption you provide, the more security you provide, the worse your user experience gets, right? And you'll often find that the most secure solutions are the ones that have the most horrendous user experience. And so we wanted to take the position as a security team that we needed to have zero tolerance for bad user experience, right? It wasn't going to be enough to just make people do things because security said so. We actually had to focus on the lives of our users, and not just our salespeople and our marketing people, but actually our power users, our developers, the ones that push us, the ones that want to break the rules. And so we wanted to really take an approach where we consider user experience. You know, I previously worked at Citigroup. I was there for 7.5 years. I was pretty instrumental in re-architecting the way that their corporate network was redone. It was a multi-$100 million project over the course of 2 years. At the end of this project, Citi had built the most secure corporate network you could imagine. It was absolutely rock solid. The only thing you could actually do from this network was access Bloomberg and CNBC. It took about a week before managing directors started bringing in MiFi devices, bringing in their home iPads or bringing in their home PCs, and accessing the internet outside of our purview, right? So it's really clear that if you don't focus on this user experience and you don't focus on the job that your employees are trying to do, they're going to find a way to get around these controls. And once they've done that, you've chased them into shadow IT, you've chased them onto the public internet, and you've lost your visibility. So this at a high level is how we're thinking about driving security. And this is kind of what's been sort of informing us from that perspective. We also work with a lot of our customers to solve some of these problems. So the Department of Justice is one of our publicly referenceable customers. We are a FedRAMP approved vendor, and we've been doing a lot of work with the U.S. attorneys to help enable the way that the court system works. So as you can imagine, U.S. court system, a lot of the evidence that attorneys are dealing with now is digital, it's electronic. The U.S. government and the U.S. attorneys need a way to deliver information to the plaintiffs and to the people that are facing trial. And so we've been working with the DOJ to find a way to implement some of these models about getting information to people that are going through the court process. And as you can imagine, it has to be forensically sound, right? There has to be a record around how it's delivered, and there has to be some proof that there hasn't been any tampering with the information as it's delivered. And so these are the kinds of use cases that we're helping drive for a lot of our customers. We also have this concept, and this is sort of going back to the original discussion around our security model, that we want to put your content at kind of the center of your ecosystem. So if you take a step back and think of your environment and how things have kind of grown over time, your content has proliferated to a number of different locations. And when I say content, I mean specifically things like unstructured data, which is to say PowerPoint documents, video files, Word documents, things that don't necessarily fit into a database. And so content has proliferated to a number of different services, right? You've got your Salesforce, you've got your Google Apps, you've now got Office 365. What we're looking to do is provide you with a centralized point where you can put that content and control it from a security perspective, right? Making sure that you have all this content in one central location. And then obviously we're doing this by enabling people to bring their own keys. So I'll sort of end with an observation of how we're building our service and how we're thinking about security to kind of help other folks who are thinking about using service providers. You know, 2.5 years ago, the Snowden disclosures happened, right? That was a pretty massive bombshell for anyone that was working in the cloud business, right? Everyone saw the reports, read the stories. They believed that the government had free rein and access to everyone's data and everyone's infrastructure and could do it sort of at will. We went down the road of trying to build a product that gave our customers the ability to own those encryption keys so that whenever you upload data into Box, it is encrypted with a key that we don't have access to. And that if we need to decrypt that data, we have to go back to you to get that information decrypted and obviously return you that information. And so this has really been key to enabling our use cases in very high assurance industries, financial services, healthcare, those sorts of things. And so as we start to develop and think about the way that the world is working, it was sort of the leitmotif of the last 7 years or 8 years to think that the world is shrinking, things are getting flat, the regulatory environment is simplifying. The last year and a half have kind of shown that that isn't the case, right? The world is starting to balkanize. We're getting a lot of really interesting data privacy legislation, both in continental Europe and places like Russia, Asia, Singapore, Japan. People are taking a more kind of closed view to the way that information moves, right? And so what we've heard from our customers is that they want to have the ability to do localized data processing and they want to do localized data storage. So keeping in with the tradition of giving our customers their own encryption keys, we also want to give our customers the ability to store data wherever they need to. So we can support multi-region storage in multiple data centers and make sure that we keep content that has specific protection requirements in those regions where it needs to be stored. And so if you take a step back and you look at the way that the cloud is evolving, right, the first version of the cloud was this monolithic, multi-tenant environment where everyone is sort of competing for these shared resources. What you're seeing now is essentially the balkanization of the cloud, right? And as a provider, we are moving very quickly to make sure that we can support that balkanization and to support any privacy or security requirements that you have from a data processing perspective. And so that's kind of how we've been thinking about how things develop in the world. That's kind of what we're seeing from a trends perspective. And then obviously, compliance is starting to really drive our industry, right? So this has become a real focus of how you can evaluate your cloud providers, and it's becoming a bit more of a better enabler for how you pick your cloud services. Really briefly, I think for the room, it helps to kind of understand the way that certifications work if you're not working in this space already. ISO 27001 is generally the baseline certification for any security program. That's kind of where you start. You can start to work your way up through HIPAA, FINRA, and PCI DSS Level 3. Those are much more involved certifications that provide additional coverage and controls that you have to provide. You obviously have data privacy regulations in the EU that you have to make sure that you're certified for. And then finally, SOC 1 and SOC 2 reports that are produced by a third party that you can audit. The new gold standard in compliance and certification for cloud service providers is what's called FedRAMP. FedRAMP is the US government cloud certification process. It is based on the NIST 853 standard. The NIST 853 standard, I think they're coming for me. I didn't say my Trump joke. I was afraid I'd be arrested or at least get sent to summer camp. The FedRAMP standard, and I'll just close with this, the FedRAMP standard really is the gold standard when it comes to evaluating cloud services. NIST 853 is the most massive pain in the backside you will ever try to implement. For us, it took us a 2-year journey. We are a Silicon Valley-based tech company. To comply with our FedRAMP obligations and our obligations to the U.S. Department of Defense, we had to make sure that, A, there are no foreign nationals in our critical production infrastructure, so obviously Silicon Valley company, good luck with that, and B, you have to make sure that your employees aren't using drugs in a state that just legalized recreational marijuana use. And so that said, it is not a joke, right? And so we had to fundamentally rework the way that we do our operations, the way that we do security, the way that we staff our processes. And I would say that, you know, if as you evaluate cloud providers, it's really important to consider things like FedRAMP as being the gold standard. It's one way that we, from a third-party risk management perspective, evaluate our vendors. And generally, we tend to prefer vendors that have those levels of certifications. It used to be in the past that those certifications were kind of a something that you bought, right? You paid a consultancy to come in, give you that certification, and then used it to kind of drive sales. We've gone into a phase now where they actually have meaningful teeth, and it's really difficult to maintain them. So I'll kind of end with that and sort of thank you very much for your time, and have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel. Awesome way to put a nice little end cap on this section of the program. All right, good news, coffee, cookies.